Meanwhile, I didn't have the balls and the courage and the backbone to just stand in the conversation and let her scream and yell at me and freak out and tell me all the reasons and whatever, and just hold to the principle that I knew that I could not explain. And finally it came out in this fight. Leah and I were fighting, and I don't remember, but she was screaming, she was crying. You told me that I could take control of the bank account. And in that fight, something just came through me, a divine sentence that was like, Leah, the only way we're going to make it is magic in, math out.
This is Leah Steele. Welcome to the Wealth Witch Podcast. Just a few years ago, I experienced complete financial collapse. We lost a business, our home, and a car. My husband was selling plasma to pay for diapers and formula. I was living a life I hated, and I was miserable. It was the lowest part of my life. It ended up being my biggest blessing. Just a few short years later, I've designed the life of my dreams. I live a life of luxury in beautiful Bali, Indonesia, travel the world, and spend my days helping others manifest wealth and abundance. Living a purpose-led life changed everything for me. This podcast is about my journey, my top tips and tools for manifestation, and interviews with all the amazing, world-changing, inspiring people I meet along the way. Welcome to my world.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Witch Podcast. So I'm super excited because today I have my husband, Sean Barnett, here with me to record his first episode of the podcast. So welcome, Sean. Glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So we actually recorded this episode once before in a studio here in Bali, and in true Bali fashion, the entire episode was recorded without audio in the recording studio. So this is actually the second time that we're recording this episode, but it's your official first time on the show.
That's right. And I barely remember anything we talked about, except I remember the theme of this podcast came out of that just sort of free-flowing podcast. So I'm excited to sort of do take two. I have a feeling it'll be even more valuable.
Yeah, as it always is, right? There's always a reason. So I'm much more polished in my podcast interviewing abilities now. So hopefully at least that will be better. So we've been asked multiple times to do joint live streams or to come and talk about our life and how we created this life that we live. And so this is kind of our first foray into doing that. But one of the things that people are always asking is how we've done what we did. And so I want to just talk a little bit about where we were and how we got to where we are. So I've definitely shared in previous episodes of this podcast, you know, my experience of where we were and then a little bit about how we got to where we are now. So I think it'd be great if you just shared from whatever starting point you want, where we were, what happened, and where we are now.
Absolutely. And we could obviously both spend hours and hours, and we're both writing books and all of these things. So I'll do my best to streamline this. But how we got here, I'll start at where we met. So we met in Lake Powell. We dated briefly when you were about 19 and I was 26. We never had a bad fight, but the way our lives went for about 15 years, we both traveled and started different business ventures, and we came in and out of each other's lives multiple times. So whenever we were in the same town, basically, we were dating and romantically in love with each other, and then life took us different places, and we never left each other with a fight. It was always like, well, this isn't working out. You're in New York and I'm in Utah, or I'm in Alaska and you're in Utah, or you're in LA, or I'm in Central America, or whatever it was. We just weren't physically next to each other. And so we would go on with our lives. And then when we would come back into physical proximity with each other, we had this beautiful friendship that has a certain dance of romanticism and attraction and physical you know, the physical nature of our relationship, all of those things. But it's certainly based first and foremost on a friendship that has been going on for nearly 25 years. And the next place I'll go to, you know, we got married about 10 years ago, 10 years this December. And we had been living together for maybe a year and a half before that. And we both had a kid from a previous genetic donor that neither of those genetic donors were in our lives. So we were both single parents without a partner in our lives. So it was very unique in that way that a lot of people, if they're a single parent, they are, you know, sharing custody or sharing time with another person or whatever. And so it was just me and you and the two boys. And we moved in together and started a life for ourselves. And I had been a wild child and very into, you know, at one point in my life, I was a successful drug dealer and certainly partied a lot. And you and I liked to party a lot together, but you always were able to kind of control yourself. And right around the time we got married, my drug and alcohol use really escalated. And also all sorts of issues I hadn't dealt with, abandonment issues, depression issues, health issues. All of these things kind of created this perfect storm where I really went off the deep end and I became an opiate addict and started stealing from a friend and hiding everything from you. And really, I was just a liar, a thief, and morally bankrupt in every way. And it led to my final incarceration, one of 18 incarcerations. And it really tested us. And I know it tested your resolve. But in the end, you stood by me. Although, you know, for the listening audience, I didn't get to stay home. She didn't stay by me. And I got to live at home while we were going through this. Leah held incredibly strong boundaries of this is not acceptable. And basically, if I would get my shit together, I was welcome to move back home, but under a very strict contract and written boundaries and a new agreement and a new way of living together. And that led to me coming back home, living a life that is based on telling the truth, and a journey that led us to building. You know, Leah had already been working in addiction treatment with her mother for, I don't know, at that time, maybe 12 years. I think by the end, it was 15 total. Is that about accurate, Leah?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, Leah's mom was retiring at the time. And again, a perfect storm. We decided to really up the ante and create, you know, now that I was in addiction recovery and Leah had this huge history of working in addiction recovery and her mom was a founder, a pioneer in addiction recovery, we had this opportunity where we created a really successful business, making, you know, mid to high six figures a month, you know, and Leah's probably told the story. Over a period of time, we lost about $3 million on paper and about $750,000 in real money. And we're nearly $1 million in debt and lost everything. So that's, I guess, as much as I'll go into the background. So during this time, maybe 6 months to a year before the collapse of our business, I was getting deep into meditation and ritual magic and things of that nature. And I would go on a morning hike every single day and sit on this mountain and I quit putting things out to the universe like affirmations and things like that, and instead just allowed the visions that were welling up from my soul that were the nature of who I am, just allowing them to take form in my mind. And as I would allow that to happen, I would see myself surfing somewhere out in what I considered the South Pacific. It ends up that it was the Indian Ocean, but I had been dreaming of being a surfer since I was 9 years old. And here I was, you know, maybe 47, 48 years old, allowing these images to really come up and allowing that, you know, if there was a genie, what would I really be doing? What is my life really calling for? And it was always this surfing thing. And it didn't make any sense because Leah and I were involved in it. Leah was the president of the equivalent of the PTA of the Catholic school. She was on the board of the baseball director. I was we were in that country club lifestyle, going to all the fundraising galas and living this sort of hoity-toity lifestyle that was centered around money and prestige and Audis and nice cars and things and living in a million-dollar mansion on the hill. And, you know, everything was centered around, I guess for me, a vision or a story of what is success. And that story was created by some imaginary jury in my head that included my father, my mother, my grandfather, teachers, coaches that were saying, Sean, a successful life is this. And it always had to do with money and nice things and all this. And instead, when I allowed the visions to come forth, there I was surfing somewhere on an island out in the middle of the ocean on the other side of the world. And it didn't make any sense. There was, in my mind, in my, you know, conscious mind, in my frontal lobe, if you will, I said, well, this is a nice fantasy, but there's no way it could ever happen. Leah would never go for it, and I'm not going to abandon my family for this dream, and there's just no way it would happen. Our business could never do it. It just won't happen. But I'll just allow the visions to keep playing out, and I'll just go ahead and fantasize and just allow it, the visions to form. And pretty soon, as the visions became more and more vivid, our business suddenly began to crumble. And our entire reality deconstructed around us. And Leah and I were both left in, you know, I think we went through every emotion possible. For me, I won't speak for Leah, but for me, I went through rage, grief, shame, guilt, fear, basically every lower tiered emotion that I can imagine. And at the end of it all, when literally I had sold everything, Leah was watching me, I sold every gun I had, every sports paraphernalia thing. I had collected an amazing collection of autographs and jerseys and art and just let go of everything. And when I had finally let go of everything, Leah, just one day out of nowhere, literally, I think around the time we were packing everything up and sold everything and had lost our house and my car had been repossessed, out of nowhere, Leah was like, Sean, when we rebuild, would you be open to doing it like in a tropical place like Costa Rica, is what she said. And I could still get very emotional right now, because right then is when I saw it. And I was like, oh my, like, wow, there it is. The opportunity that was impossible, the opportunity that could never have taken place in the old paradigm of our life and the way our life was structured, that after the entire annihilation and destruction, all of a sudden Leah had caught the vision from somewhere. Maybe it was always in her soul. Who knows? I'd let you, if you want to expand on that, Leah, where did that vision come for you?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't really know, other than, you know, that I never liked the winter. I never liked the cold. We were living in Salt Lake City, Utah, which is like freezing cold in the winter and has tons of snow. And I'm not a skier. I'm not a snow sports person. And I'm a very, very, even emotionally like level person. So I didn't get seasonal depression, but definitely like wasn't my happiest in the cold. I just didn't like it. And the happiest years of my life had been living in Southern California, where the weather was pretty much the same year round with just kind of a slight change. And I've always loved the ocean, and vacations for me were always, let's go to the beach, let's go to the beach, let's go to the beach. So I don't really even know. I mean, definitely, I'm sure you planted the seed in my, you know, with our quantum entanglement.
That's exactly.
Happened, but I also was just exhausted and I was tired and I wanted a fresh start. But, you know, I think it's funny because a lot of people go, they ran away. And, you know, it's, and that's a whole other podcast for another time, right? But for me, it was like, I wanted a fresh start. And there were so many things that were happening in the world at that time too, where, you know, when we decided that we were going to do it, for me, it was just about like, let's try something new. Let's give the kids an opportunity to become global citizens instead of just citizens of the United States. And I wanted to be somewhere warm. I think both of us, you know, we had traveled together to Mexico, and both of us, you know, we have that thing where people either like third world countries and being in them and thrive there, or they don't. And I think that through traveling with you in those places, we had both realized that we both really love that and we could thrive there. So for me, I just was like, yeah, let's, you know, what would happen? There was nothing at that point holding us. And I was so tired of, you know, and obviously I was going through my own deconstruction processes, going through the spiral and doing lots of personal work where I was deconstructing what I believed I had to be a perfect mother. And my ideas of why tradition were so important and why security and stability of like a home and things and possessions was important for raising children. So my whole world was changing internally as well. And, you know, but I think it was just, it was certainly that quantum entanglement. I was going through my own things. I was having my own awakenings and you were having those visions and the combination of, you know, the two of us coming together. And I guess the other thing that I would say is at that time, I was absolutely focused on making my business successful and creating financial stability and security for our family. And I wanted that to be location independent. Like I really was very focused on us being able to make money, like never having that thing happen again, where it's like, this brick and mortar business collapses and we're left with nothing. So I was very much in the manifestation of a business that could be done from anywhere. And so I think just like the beautiful combination of all of that stuff created that thing in me that just said, hey, would you consider doing this?
Yeah. And it was interesting because I had lived in Costa Rica for about eight months when I was 22 years old or something. And so I feel like that was sort of a natural first start, but I want to address how we live our lives based on synchronicity and how after we had said, you know, Leah and I had both said, okay, well then that's the plan. We're going to move to Costa Rica. And within the next week, every time I had mentioned to someone that we were thinking of moving out of the country and going to Costa Rica, that I was going to start my surfing career and all this, you know, one after another, people were saying to me, have you ever considered Bali? I really didn't know where Bali was. But after about a week, the number that sticks out in my head is that seven people had said to me, you should check out Bali. And all I did is mention to her, hey, I've had like seven people mention to me something about Bali. And Leah was like, oh my God, in this last week, seven people have mentioned to me something about Bali. I remember it was an exact synchronicity. And in that moment, Leah looked at me and is like, that's it. We're going to Bali. And it was just like a thunderbolt. It was a decision. We knew it. Neither of us actually knew where Bali was on the earth. I had it mistaken for like Barbados or something. When I went to go look for it, I was looking in the Bahamas somewhere to find Bali and to find out that it was, you know, over here below Vietnam and Malaysia, you know, that it's in Indonesia and in the Indian Ocean. I mean, I knew nothing about it. And so I started, you know, doing some research. And the first thing I typed in was Bali surfing. And it was, it ends up, this is like, this is the surfing mecca of the planet. There could not be a better place to learn and thrive in surfing than Bali, Indonesia. They're really, and especially one that is also has all the bells and whistles that Leah requires to have a happy life, you know, spas and nail salons and wonderful restaurants and lots of variety and energy and a cosmopolitan city with a third world flair, you know, all of those things that it has everything. It was just unbelievable. But we actually discovered all of those things after we had made the decision, which I think is really important for people to recognize that that's how much we trust whatever you want to call it, the divine, magic, natural knowing, cosmic intelligence, the Akashic field, whatever you want to call that. Leah and I live our lives in such alignment with that, that my first experience of Bali was walking the streets on Google Maps, you know? From Salt Lake City.
Yeah. So we moved here sight unseen. Neither of us had ever been here. We sold everything we owned, the remainder of what we owned, aside from some belongings in a small storage unit. And we moved here with two of our children, literally like pulled our middle son out of school. And our youngest son was not in school at the time. And we moved the two of them with us to Bali.
Yep. Somebody picked us up at the airport and dropped us off at a villa that we had only seen in pictures and we were home.
So what is our life like now, I guess, like just from your perspective, like what is the life that we're living that we've created now?
So the key point and something that I think is really key, and this was sort of the theme of this podcast too, that there's this. So we had set that goal and we said in 12 months, we will be in Bali. And we leased a house in Salt Lake for 1 year to prepare ourselves to build our businesses and all that. And Leah thrived and I sucked. And we got to this place where we were probably 4 months short of our goal. I mean, we were supposed to be moving in like 4 months and we had not moved any closer financially to making it happen. And we started fighting, and Leah, along her way, had realized this amazing ability that she has to manifest. Leah can create money out of nowhere. And a lot of Leah's beliefs around how spending and buying things was really important to you. It was like your love language, right? And why you felt that you could manifest unconditionally, but also spend unconditionally. And you had a mindset, it seemed, that no matter how much you spent, we would just make more.
Yeah, I mean, at some level, I think I still have that belief, right? Because for me, it's really important that I stay in this mindset of we constantly live in states of overflow. But yeah, I guess what I would say is that it's very easy for me to manifest. It's very easy for me to manifest under stress and duress. So but manifesting money has never been a problem. Creating financial resources has never been a problem. Certainly holding on to money has been a challenge for me. And, you know, I don't know that it's so much about, I mean, I think at the time when this happened, when we sort of discovered this thing that we're about to talk about, which is the magic in math out, spending for me, there was a lot of emotional conditioning and programming from my childhood and from my upbringing that played a role in me feeling like I needed to spend. And that has shifted dramatically for me, really since getting to Bali. But I mean, it's the tremendous amount of wealth consciousness work that I do, right? And identifying some of those patterns and behaviors, which is probably for another podcast. But yeah, I think that at the time that we were going through this, you know, my business was nowhere near where it is now, but became very successful very quickly.
Yeah.
And we were making a lot of money every month. And we weren't saving or holding on to money to make this trip happen. So
we had really large streams of income, 5 figures a month. And my security level was, I wanted to have that first month's villa paid for, our airplane ticket, and $10,000 in the bank. And for some people, they'll say that is a crazy low amount of security to move your family to the other side of the world. But that's the truth. We had paid for a villa, paid for our one-way ticket, and had $10,000 in the bank. That's it. But we were 4 months out and still had not bought our plane tickets, had not paid for the villa, and had like $1,000 in the bank. And we started fighting. And that fight was probably the closest we've ever come to divorce, I would say, during that stretch. It was the only time I think that word has come up in our conversations. But it was so intense. And for me, there was this huge fear, and I kept avoiding the conversation, or I would tiptoe into the conversation. And when Leah would get upset at me for trying to bring it up again, I would cower, and I would go away and say, I can't take this fight. And so I would sit and brew and stew and have a pity party and tell myself all these stories that my wife just doesn't understand. And meanwhile, I didn't have the balls and the courage and the backbone to just stand in the conversation and let her scream and yell at me and freak out and tell me all the reasons and whatever, and just hold to the principle that I knew that I could not explain. And finally it came out in this fight. Leah and I were fighting, and I don't remember, but she was screaming, she was crying. You told me that I could take control of the bank account. And in that fight, something just came through me, a divine sentence that was like, Leah, the only way we're going to make it is magic in, math out. And when I said that, I remember watching you sort of surrender. And whether or not you were happy about it is beside the point. You basically gave up and went. It was like you could feel the resonance of the truth in that statement, that if we followed a plan of magic in, math out, that we would thrive. And it was within 3 weeks, I could get very emotional at this. Within 3 weeks to 4 weeks, Leah came over. I was working in my office at the time. And you came in and said, Sean, you were right. Thank you. And I remember just bawling, and this moment where you were just like, wow, this principle works. And it's worked for us ever since. And our relationship has never been better. We made it through that and have made the life of our dreams. And it was just all from, you know, I think you honoring all of your emotions and rage and frustration and just letting it all out. And me having that ability to just stand in the fire and allow you to do that. And then allow that moment where divine spoke through me and just said, it's magic in, math out. And if we follow that, and both of us knew it was true. And from that moment on, now here we are. So
yeah, I think one of the things that comes up for me as we talk about it is that, you know, I really believe that bending, we could go into all the stuff around the programming and conditioning that happens around money, but spending is something that we feel we can control. And when we feel out of control in our finances, when we're unsure of where the next money is coming from, or we have, some of us have tons of money and we still feel out of control because we feel like it could be taken away from us at any moment. Spending is something that we can control. And so a lot of people are out of integrity with themselves when it comes to spending because they're just trying to find something that feels like it's in control. And going out and buying something is like the most control you can feel in that moment. Well, I have control over, I'm going to spend on this thing. And so I think one of the reasons why I see people get so backed up or upset around like, I don't want a budget, or I don't want to have to be, it feels constraining to them. It feels like more control. And I think the thing that I remember from that conversation most isn't the, like, certainly that resonated with me, the magic in, math out, but the thing that resonated the most with me was I remember you said to me, I guarantee you, you will be able to do the things that you want to do. You might have to not do them for about 3 to 4 weeks, but after that point, there's going to be plenty of money for you to do all of the things that you want to do. And for me, it was always that, like, there was very much something in the, I work really hard. I want to reward myself. I feel like I deserve to reward myself because I work so hard. And there's this piece that it's like, when I spend, I can feel like I have control over my life that is fairly out of control when it comes to money because of the global financial elite, because of the financial slavery consciousness that we all exist in on this planet, right? Mm-hmm. But I believed you. Like, I believed you when you said that. And I was at that point, yeah, again, the fight had been so horrendous. I was like, I surrender, I give in, I'm willing to try everything. Like, fine, go do it. Like, let's see if it works, right? And yeah, I think it was within 2 weeks from that point that I was like, oh, wow. Like, nothing really changed for me. Like, I didn't feel any kind of discomfort. And with the system, the math out system that we were using, I had plenty of my own spending money that I could spend things on, and you were saving yours like you tend to do. And I was spending my disposable income I was spending, and your disposable income you were saving. But it took the pressure off the relationship, certainly. And implementing the principle allowed the money to really start to flow in.
Yeah. There is some sort of like universal law to the energy of money where if you are a good custodian of money, then the energy of money somehow trusts you and it just flows like crazy. Whereas when you're a bad custodian of money, and this is just the framework, I guess, that I look at it in. When I'm a poor custodian of money, it's like money doesn't trust me and it won't come in. And I will also say for those that are listening, especially men that maybe are in a similar situation, the scariest moment was when, because I had done the math and we, you know, I was looking at how much we were making and I was like, Leah could have 10% of everything we make and she could light it on fire if she wants. She could flush it down the toilet and she would be flushing so much money down the toilet. Like, she could do everything she wants with just 10%. But it needs to build up. We need to build it a little bit for this program. And I just knew, and I gave you that guarantee. And I was like, I promise you, in 3 weeks, I remember exactly, you will be so grateful. And when you turned it over, that was the moment of absolute terror for me. As I was like, now I've put everything on the line, all that I've been fighting for, all that we've been saying, now I have to come through and implement this plan and this structure, and it has to work. I mean, that was that burn the bridge moment. Talk about just terrifying. Like, if this doesn't work, I don't know if we will work. Like, it's all or nothing now. We were all in, and I had to deliver, and we did. And I think there's a lot of lesson in that too. And when you really put yourself on the line, and there's no other option, when it's an absolute decision, and I, you know, for me, if I put my word behind it and say, by God, come hell or high water, no matter what, you're going to find out that this works, and then do it. It's one of the most amazing experiences a person can go through to manifest that type of thing, especially when it had not manifest for whatever 40 something years of my life, or, you know, we're talking decades of fighting against this, and then all of a sudden going, nope, we're going to do it. And we did it. I'm so proud of us.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a formula that we use that is the math out part, and Sean really handles that part of it, and I just sort of do my part, which is magic in. So I get to just manifest and do the part that's my strength, and Sean does his strength, which is, you know, really keeping an eye on where we're spending and how we're allotting our resources. The really beautiful thing I think about this for me is that, you know, it took practice. Like, we had to practice it for a while, and then we sort of fell into this like natural rhythm of it's just what we do now. And sometimes we're looser, and it's it's super easy for us to identify it because money starts looking a little tight sometimes. And we're like, we're not following the plan. But we don't have to be as strict about it anymore, because it's like we sort of naturally fell into this rhythm of being in the plan and being in the process, and we're not perfect at it.
No, absolutely not. But we're about 2.5 years into it. So we've practiced it pretty well. And without going too deep into it, you know, basically half of our income has to cover our expenses. And then we have money allotted to charity and service. And we have money allotted to the kids and their endeavors and savings and that. And then we have money that's for our to blow if we want to spend at our discretion. Like Leah said, you know, she a lot of times will utilize that to the fullest. And for me, I get to save mine if I want, or stash it away, or put it into an investment, or do whatever I want to do with it. But we both have the ability to do what we want with a certain amount of money, and then the other areas are non-negotiable. And there's also an aspect of charity that's a huge part of our lives. And we both understand there is some sort of law of money that, yes, it will come to you if you are a good custodian, and it will be harder to come to you if you're a poor custodian. And then you can turbocharge it by giving a bunch of it away, by giving it to others and doing good with it and serving, somehow adds this other little turbocharger. And when we don't do it, again, we'll notice, we just basically, I'm kind of a measurement freak, I guess. And I measure things, and I just pay attention to the patterns against the results. And if certain patterns match certain results, then I encourage us to continue with those patterns, or to move away from those patterns if they are creating a negative result, I suppose.
Yeah. So I wanted to touch on that, because the charity piece for us is a non-negotiable. And sometimes we give more and sometimes we give less, but we're always giving. That for us has become something that is just a very, very ingrained part of our life. And I know that it's really difficult for people when they're starting to understand these principles and they're starting to do wealth consciousness work to go, oh, I'm going to give a percentage of the money away when I don't even feel like I have enough to live or survive on right now. It just works. And it's interesting for us, because we have a lot of, like, obviously we have a lot of spiritual people that are friends that understand this principle, but we have a lot of millionaire friends that aren't spiritual people that do this because they just get it. Like, they don't understand the spiritual principles behind it, but they understand that it works. So they just do it.
They understand the results in their bank account, and it doesn't make sense. It should be counterintuitive mathematically, but it's not. And I don't understand exactly why that works or how that works, but I'm certain about it.
So I want to touch on something, because I think that, you know, we have a lot of haters out there that that know us from, you know, our previous life and our business collapsing. And, you know, there's a lot of naysayers about how we choose to live our lives. And, you know, I think that we're still paying off a tremendous amount of debt from imploded business. And we're still working our way through what of that is payable and what of that we're going to pay. But one of the things for us, and I'll just speak for myself, but I would love to hear your take on this. One of the things for me is that we were in a position where we gave and gave and gave and gave, and we gave so much of ourselves, and we never paid ourselves first. We always paid ourselves last. And we wound up in a situation where we lost our home, we lost a car, we were 3 hours away from being homeless, and our children almost didn't have anywhere to live. And there were periods of time while we were losing all of that, that, you know, we were eating rice and beans and we were struggling to put food on the table. And when all of that happened, and we moved into this kind of new way of being, and we shifted our paradigm, because that's really what I believe we did when we chose to move to Bali. We popped a timeline, we shifted our paradigm. I, in those moments, was like, this will never happen again. Never again will I be worried about feeding my children or having a roof over my head. Like, I will put our family first now before anything else. And that has become a foundation for me of part of this math out, where it's like, I do not give to others. I do not pay debts. I do not do anything until my family is safe, stable, and secure. So as a result of that, we have chosen to build a business, create a stable lifestyle for ourselves. We live in a place that intentionally we can live a amazingly luxurious lifestyle for what, a sixth or a tenth of the cost that we were in the United States. Yep. So we've chosen to set ourselves up in a certain way so that we can live a certain lifestyle. But we have really, I have really shifted, and I definitely want your take on this. But for me, I learned hard lessons about what happens in business and what is business and what is personal, and people taking you as your business, and the expectations of kind of human beings that you will sacrifice everything on behalf of someone else. And that in and of itself, I mean, that was one of the major reasons why we ended up where we were, because we were so out of alignment with caring for ourselves first and putting ourselves first. We literally would pay everyone, pay the bills, and not take care of ourselves and our family, because that's what we were expected to do as business owners, or that's what we were expected to do as leaders of a company. And so that's a big thing that shifted for me as well, in the no, being a good custodian of your money means that you're not overgiving. So there's the piece where it's like, yes, giving is amazing, and to not be overgiving. So I would love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, it's all in ratio, right? So when we were in the business and we were giving everything and had nothing, I mean, you know, I was giving plasma for diapers. Like, I was using my old drug addict tricks to just get diapers for our baby. And meanwhile, we were having, you know, $100,000 in income, and I'm giving plasma for diapers because we were paying everything off trying to keep the business afloat. And, you know, I think we both learned really the hard way about borrowing. You know, we kept borrowing to keep it afloat and trusting, because we weren't following mathematical principles. We were following our heart. And when you have a big heart, you can think, I can just give, and it'll and the universe will take care of me. And I think that both of us believed that with everything. And it ended up just being foolish. The universe doesn't really give a shit about your heart. It gives a shit about laws. It follows certain laws that the universe itself doesn't have some, it's not a person. I mean, you know, to me, it's all his mind, but when we're talking about money, it follows a system. And so for us, you know, it's generally around 10% of income goes back out in the form of charity. It's around there. Sometimes it's a little more, sometimes it's a little less. You know, you and I have found we just sprinkle that shit all over the place, and it's awesome. Everywhere we go, we're sprinkling, you know, charity and gratitude and all of those things. But just like when I was spending all my time doing workshops down at the homeless shelter, like, poor shit rubs off. And if I'm giving all of my time to the homeless and all of my time to charity and 100, then I'm going to be out of balance. And the universe does not respond to that in a way. It just doesn't follow the mathematical principles. In the end, there is an aspect of math that is immutable. If you don't follow the math, all the magic in the world will crumble. It's the two together, the structure and the movement, the energy and the law, whatever that is, that binding principle, the masculine and the feminine, you know, It's bold. You know, we both learned that the hard way. People who invested in us and in our vision and in our business, you know, they wanted to get a great profit. And when things didn't go their way, then they just wanted us to bleed till the end of time. And we've both realized, you know, 2 years ago when we were $750,000 in debt, and, you know, 2.5 years ago when that was happening and I was giving plasma for diapers, there was no light at the end of the tunnel. But by following these principles and what we've done by still living a luxurious lifestyle, by moving to somewhere where the US dollar goes about 7 times as far as it does in the United States, where we can live in a mansion on the beach for the price of a small townhome in, you know, in a nice neighborhood in the United States, and where a 5-star meal costs $20 instead of $200 or whatever, that type of thing. We now can see we've been able to do it all, which is have the lifestyle, follow the principles, still give to charity. And now there finally is light at the end of the tunnel. There finally is a place where we can open discussions with some of these huge debts, these, you know, 6-figure debts that we have, that it's like, oh, we can implement a plan now. Before, what were we going to do? I can give you $5. You know what I mean? Hopefully I can pay off $750,000. I got a 20 for you. You know what I mean?
So I think it's important to say too, because this is one of the things for us that we implemented that, you know, we haven't even gone back to it, but we don't have credit cards. So everything that we do is based in cash. So we've been living based in cash for
maybe 3. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 years.
Since we lost everything. Yep.
Yeah. So, well, that's longer than that. But so we don't. Yeah.
And no borrowing whatsoever. Haven't borrowed a penny.
Yeah.
Nothing on credit and haven't borrowed a penny.
So, and those are non-negotiables for us now as well. We've been talking recently about getting a credit card for travel issues over here in Asia, but we still haven't even pulled the trigger on that. We're still trying to figure out alternative ways of doing it, because living a life that's based in cash is so freeing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Okay, so we've literally like almost gotten to the hour point in the podcast just talking about those things. But we did have some questions that came in that people had asked us to answer. So I want to choose a couple of them, you know, and I think that this has gone well, and provided all the listeners love it, we'll maybe make this a series where we come back and address other questions that we're getting and talk more about this stuff as we're journeying this magic in math out life that we live. So one of the questions was, which I think is a really great question, what do you do when you and your partner are on different levels of wealth mindset? Meaning like, I mean, my example of this is, I think that when I first started doing this wealth work and we were like, everything was falling apart, right? And I decided to do Money Mentality Makeover with Amanda Francis. And I was just like, nope, I'm going to do this. And I was like, I committed. And I was like, I'm going to work these principles like it's my job. And I'm going to, you know, and I was completely showing up. And you were kind of just like, eye roll. Like,
yeah,
what is this thing? Like, this is ridiculous. And I was just, I at some level went, I have to put the blinders on, because I knew it was something that I had to do. I knew that I was tired of feeling like money was controlling me. I mean, obviously we had huge money issues, both of us, you know?
Yeah.
And so in that place, like for me, what I did was I just worked the principles and I just showed up in the mindset and I just continued to develop my magic side of things. And I think, you know, Sean started to see results from that, which is his math side of things. And then, I mean, I'll let you speak to like, my experience was the more that I was energetically backing myself in what I knew to be true, the more I was experiencing results, the more Sean could see those results, the more he got on board with what I was doing.
Yeah, 100%. It's similar to when I put my ass on the line that if we follow these math principles, it will work out for you. You know, I mean, it's that thing. It's a decision. The root word of scission is C-I-S, cut, to cut out. So an incision is to cut in your skin. A decision is to cut out all other options. When you put your ass on the line and then you follow through, everything's going to work out. That's the whole thing. So it doesn't matter whether your partner believes you or not. On the front end, if you know that you need to be doing something, do it and then make it happen. And if you make it happen, you'll show your partner that, hey, you see, and then you build the trust. The trust comes from showing the result. And that's really the only way I can put it. And, you know, you were the first to do it, you know, where I had to be on the trust. You made the statement, you know, this is what I'm doing and you'll see, Sean. And I did the eye roll and the whatever, we'll see, you know, the skeptical and all that. And you proved it. And then later we had it where the shoe was on the other foot. And we've taken this a few times. And now neither of us, when the other person, we can feel it in the resonation when somebody says, I'm doing this, and you know they're going to follow through with it. And then they do it. It builds trust in the relationship. And so the two sides to this coin is, I think, yes, if you really know you should do something and you're in a relationship where your partner is not being supportive, do it anyway. But also understand you're putting your ass on the line right there, and you better follow through and you better accomplish it and you better do it, or you've lost all credibility and your relationship's probably going to suffer severely. So if you're going to go for something like that, by God, you better follow through and do it and make it happen, or you're fucked in the relationship, you know, and the whole relationship's going to become fucked. So my advice to somebody, if they are like, hey, there's this thing, this burning desire in my soul that I want to do this, but my partner's not okay with it. Well, do it anyway. But once you launch and you jump off that cliff and you say, I'm going regardless without your support, you better follow through and you better give it your everything. And if you do, then everybody's happy, even the skeptical one and the one who knew on the front end.
Yeah. So this is a good question, I think, because I certainly struggle in this area. And like, we're not perfect. We have our own journeys that we journey every day. And marriage is a balance of, it's balance and compromise in all things, right? But the question was, how do we balance relationship stuff with money stuff, was part one of the question. And part two of the question was, how do you be all in on relationship and all in on money? So for me, I'll say, I think when our finances are balanced, our relationship is more balanced. When our finances are out of balance, our relationship is out of balance. And so the more we practice these principles and we stick to our plan and we both do our part, the more in balance our relationship is how I feel. The part where I really struggle, and I will like totally like call myself out here, is I struggle balancing my relationships with money, with earning money, because I can get so singularly focused. And, you know, I would work all day, every day, if you let me, like I would literally sit in here and work, you know, and so I have to be pulled out of that back into the world. And so as a result, like that is a place where I struggle. I struggle balancing being all in on money and creating money and creating wealth, and being all in our relationship, and in even my relationship with the kids. Like, it's all relationships. Sure. It's not just our relationship, right? Because I literally can just go into like wealth creation mode, and then there's nothing that exists outside of that very long, deep tunnel that I'm in. So I would love to, I know that you have feelings on that, so I'd love to hear how you feel about it for you, but definitely you can share your experience with me as well.
So, you know, I think you saw, I don't know how long ago it was, where all of a sudden through a meditation, I think, and some work with one of my top mentors, I grasped this concept of the relationship being its own thing. It's its own entity. It's something, you know, certainly I'm a part of it, but it's not me. So it's like I can take the relationship itself and turn it into an object. I know this on a podcast, so people can't see, but picture I'm holding in my hand. Picture that there's a ball of energy that I'm holding in the palm of my hand, and that is the relationship itself. It's sort of separate from me. I can hold it between me and Leah, and I can look at it and say, this is the relationship itself. And I can look at that relationship and say, how do I add value to the relationship? And if I focus on adding value to the relationship, for Leah, a lot of times when she looks at that relationship, she's going to say, I add value to that relationship by adding more money into it, by adding more financial security into it. I might look at that relationship and say, I'm going to add value to that relationship by adding more fun, or adding some romance, or going and flirting with my wife and getting her to laugh when she's having a hard time, or something like that, where I find, how can I add value? But I'm not taking anything that, if my wife is upset with the relationship, for instance, I don't have to take it personally because I'm still holding that relationship out here in front of me and saying, oh. And then if my wife is upset with the relationship in some way, I can look at it objectively and say, oh, and I'm not taking it personally. When I'm taking it personally, I get defensive and now I can't add value back to the relationship. But when I'm watching and listening to her concerns with the relationship itself, and I'm not attached to the relationship, I can go, oh, well, if I change this behavior and maybe stop doing this and do more of this or that type of thing, it'll make the relationship better. And in that relationship are all these things, right? Like finances, health. But that's the way I frame it. And I think that is has really helped us stay happy with each other and committed to the relationship. And I'll say one more thing, and I don't know how you've taken this or me, but you know, I know there's this thing that, you know, love yourself first or take care of yourself first. And one of the things that, from my perspective, it's important for me to remember that love myself first does not mean love myself most. It means that there's a priority to things. And if I'm not taking care of my mind and my spirit and my physical body and my health and those kind of things, I'm not going to be available to have the power to hold that relationship out there objectively and add value to it. And so it's important, I think, maybe for people to hear that for me, the relationship is the most important thing in my life. The relationship takes precedence for me over myself. So in other words, the relationship is more important. That doesn't mean it comes first. There's a difference between how much I care for something and the order with which I go about it. I think, you know, back on finances, Leah and I would both say paying off the debts is more important to us than having fun. But if we're not enjoying our lives somehow, we're not going to have the energy to build the business to the place where we can pay off the debt. And so taking care of ourselves has to come first, but paying off the debt is probably the most important goal or objective in creating our financial system. Because we know as soon as the debt's paid off, we're really going to be free. Then we can really go wild and go crazy. And so I don't know if that makes sense, but there is some nuance in there where first does not mean most. It just means the order in which things should be done. Again, we're talking about the mathematics of things, and that's something that I see pretty clearly. And then, of course, there's that magical part, the love and the spontaneity and the allowing the spirit to dance through me. And of course, I don't want to live a life of complete structure, but it's the including both of them and the and rather than the either or, I think is the most important thing for me on that.
Yeah, amazing. There were so many good questions, and there's more that I want to ask and answer, but I think it's a great place to sort of wrap it up and end. And provided you guys love this episode and give us feedback that you love it, we will be happy to come back and answer some more of these, because I have 4 or 5 more that I think would be great for us to kind of riff on and discuss. So maybe we can make it a regular thing. But I think it was great. I really enjoyed having you on. And I like when we can talk about our different perspectives, because I think we're very much in alignment in many ways, but we're very, very different people. And we have lots of different philosophies about life in general, in all things, in even how we practice and utilize magic, how we interact with money, all of it. I think we have a lot of similarities and we have a lot of differences. So I think it was great to sort of be here on the podcast and share that and show the other half of my life. So thanks for being here. It was fun.
Yeah. To expand on that real quick, I think the way I would look at that, or the way I experience that, is it's almost like we share a heart. You and I share this same heart, but we see the world through completely different lenses. Like our lenses are completely different, but where we're connected or where we share is in that heart space, where I really do feel one with you and a part of you. But certainly I know that the way I see things is, I mean, our lenses are night and day.
Yep. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. And until next time, we are signing off.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining me. Remember, wealth is a mindset, and you absolutely deserve to live the life you deeply desire. And with belief and intention, you create your reality. Until next time, this is Leah Steele, the Wealth Witch.